Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ryan Folland, and you are listening to The 313 Show, the show where we essentially help break down what is complex, what is confusing, as in the question, what do you do, how do you do it, and who do you do that for, into three sentences, one sentence, and ultimately three words. We've got an exciting guest who's solving some real problems out there, but before we get going, here's a little housekeeping.
KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.
The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents.
All right, we are back, and you've heard it here. We are KUCI, and the thoughts and opinions and views and words that are coming out of our mouths are going to be ours and not necessarily those of anyone else. Welcome. Happy New Year to everybody out there. I think this year's positioned to be great. It's a couple weeks into it, and it's already raining. So here in California, this is an amazing thing. The show that you are listening to today, whether or not you are regular or you just happen to be driving by tuning in, is called The 313 Show, and I am your host, Ryan Folland. What is the 313? It is the area code of Eminem, famously, 313, but this is also a communication theory that I've got that I work on with people, and it helps to make things that are complex a bit more simple. So I bring on amazing guests, and we dig down into what they do, why they do it, how they do it, and then try to package it into fewer words with a little bow on top. And during this whole process, you get to learn about them, you get to learn about this crazy theory, and see how you can apply it to your life. Now today, we have a gentleman who is sitting across from me here in the studio at KUCI, and his name is Rick Gerard. Rick, how are you today?
I'm doing fantastic, Ryan. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
No problem. Well, I'm glad that you made the trek all the way here from...
from Irvine.
Okay, excellent.
And it was a long jaunt.
Yeah, a long
arduous
jaunt.
Arduous journey.
Yeah, and the rain and the sleet and the snow.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
And people don't here just do not know how to drive when it's raining.
No.
A little bit of rain.
Yeah. So how do you, okay, so for those who don't know, what is your piece of advice to successfully driving in the rain?
drive like you're driving when it's not raining.
Oh, really?
Yeah, why not?
Okay. See, on this show, this is a first snippet of advice that is hiding in plain sight. And I think a lot of times we look for answers, we try to overcomplicate things, but they're just right there in front of us. So if it's raining, drive.
Like it's not.
Okay, I dig it.
Yeah, why not?
Why not? Because rain is a freak occurrence here, and so we think that this is crazy, and we have to, like, I don't know, grip the steering wheel tighter, and...
But that's not the case. I mean, you're... Same traction, same everything. Well, yeah, maybe a little less.
Traction?
Maybe a little less.
Maybe within the first hour or so, right?
I'm certainly not an expert on it, but the fact of the matter is... I have not lost control of my car, and I drive the same way that I do when I'm driving, when it's sunny and hot out.
Okay.
So,
do you roll your windows down when it rains?
No, I don't. I don't put the top down either.
Okay. Okay, good. All right. See, we're learning a little bit here as we go.
Well, I mean, if I'm feeling pretty daring, why not? I'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to do that on the way home. Thanks.
Yeah. Just crack the
windows. I'm going to open my sunroof.
Yeah.
Just let it pour.
You know what? Take your own advice. That's the best part here. Drive like it's sunny when it's raining, leaving the windows down and the top down. So I think we could easily talk about driving in the rain for an hour.
Probably.
But I think we have some more exciting things to talk about. And that is essentially... you, the problem you solve, your solution, and your market. That's going to be the guiding light, the yarn, the thread that I'm going to pull out of you until your sweater is unraveled and everybody can see who you are. But I'm sure you have a shirt underneath. That's nothing weird.
Yeah, and I've heard you're quite the knitter, so you can knit me a new scarf.
Yeah, I can apparently. Knit, actually. Yeah. I know how to knit. I know how to do sign language. I've got all kinds of skills that people don't realize.
Sweet.
Here, watch. We'll just do the rest of the show in sign language.
I know this one.
Oh, yeah. Well, we can't say that on air. It's a good thing this isn't being videotaped.
Right.
All right, so, Rick, I always like to start the show off, aside from talking about safety and driving in rain, but getting to know you as a person. And I believe that stories... and the stories of our past are the quickest way to get to know somebody. Now, we know each other as an acquaintance standpoint. We've done some speaking, shared the stage. You've done some emceeing. We've been around where we know each other, but
yeah.
I want to get to know you a little bit more through story time. So if you had to choose a story from your past, and it could be recent past, it could be very, very much the past, but if the only tool I had was this story to tell somebody about you, oh my God, this guy Rick, you got to meet him. This one time he blank. What would that story be? What comes top of mind? That's like a good
reflection. We have like, what, an hour, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, I would go back to high school, sometime around there. I had this big dream when I was growing up. I don't know where I got it, but I was a big fan of photography. And my goal was at one point in my life to become a Playboy photographer. And it wasn't because, well, the girl part was part of it, but mostly because they did incredible work. I had actually worked for a photographer. And I remember going to Sammy's Camera, and we were sitting there, and that was when Photoshop was just coming out, and they were like, the people working on the machine next to us were from Playboy, and they were like just making these photos amazing. We're like, wow, this is so I was captivated.
Okay.
I'm like, I want to be a Playboy photographer. So wiggled my way into, I did a lot of photography classes after college, like community colleges, and then I got myself into a pretty good art school. I went to for about a year.
And all focused on photography.
All focused on photography.
Okay.
That's all I wanted to do.
And this is before the digital phone.
Yeah, this is back when you had to work in a dark room.
Okay.
So I had about a year of schooling, and then my parents ended up getting divorced, and so I had to it kind of happened midway into my next semester starting, and so I took some time off, and what ended up happening was I was just picking up lots of work. It was really fun. I worked on a couple Playboy shoots.
So you got there. You got to the mansion. Did you get to the mansion?
Well, indirectly, I have a friend who got me to the mansion.
Okay.
One time. Yeah, so okay. It was kind of cool. We went and hung out in the grotto and
nice.
Yeah.
Were there photos allowed there?
No, I don't think
okay.
so.
Okay, now remember,
we didn't have camera phones back
okay.
then.
Okay, so it was a safer environment.
This is in the 90s.
Well, we are regulated by the FCC, so you have to tell me all of those stories after the fact.
You got it.
Okay, so you got some, you achieved an element of the goal. You did some photography.
Yeah, I didn't finish school, but I got sucked into the minutiae of the work, and I started picking up a lot of assistant work. I worked for a photographer at the time. And so I was shooting all the time, and I was starting to get really burnt out. I was becoming kind of a glorified construction worker in a way, because I was working on sets and then building them and then testing out all the lighting and then moving on to the next one. So I was doing a lot of that work, and it really wasn't, you know, you're working 12 to 16 hour days for pennies, and it just wasn't working for me. And what ended up happening was, we reconnected with my cousin and her husband. And her husband had been a really successful guy who was in the recruiting business. And, you know, we went and hung out with them, and they had this great house in the Hollywood Hills, and he was just doing extremely well. And I'm like, man, this poor starving artist thing is just not working for me. So, continued the relationship with them. He was trying to get me to come work with him, and he had an office in somewhere in the valley, and I just wasn't interested. And then he came to me one day and he said, hey, look, we're going to move up to Sun Valley, Idaho to start up a company. And if you'd like to come up, you have a job. And I thought about it for about 5 minutes, and I said, I'm in, let's do it.
5 minutes can be a long time, though.
Yeah, it was.
But was it like a silent, awkward 5 minutes where he's looking at you, you're looking at him, and you're like, hold on, just hold on. And then
right? Well, what ended up happening was I was getting really big into snowboarding. I've always been a board guy. I grew up surfing, and I got really heavily into snowboarding around that time. And so my follow-up question was to him, you know, is it close to the ski resort area? I said, you know, Ketchum's actually right in Sun Valley. Like, there's Mount Baldy's right there.
Hmm.
And I said, sight unseen, I'm like, I'm in, let's do it. When do you want me to move up? And I went to work on that Monday, put in my notice. I think I gave my boss a month's notice and moved up there within a month.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what I hear from that story is that you have a creative soul.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Now, are you a regular goofy on your boards?
I'm goofy.
Are you goofy on both?
Yeah.
Okay.
I could ride Switch on snow. Well, I used to be able to ride. I haven't snowboarded in about 5 years.
Okay.
Shame on me.
So you're obviously passion driven.
Yeah.
You've got goals that you set that you make, and you are an opportunity junkie.
Yeah, and a bit of an adrenaline junkie too.
Yeah, and I would kind of fit the opportunity of within that, right? So to jump on a board, whether it's skate, surf, snow.
Yeah.
And so from a work-life balance standpoint, sounds like you've had kind of an interesting past. So do you feel that you've been more of a worker or more of a player, or have you always found how to integrate work and play in some weird way?
I've always found balance in some weird way. I can't go 110% for, 4 days straight on work. I have to reset my mind quite often. So right now I don't really surf that much. Now that I moved back to California, I spend a lot of time doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which to me is between that and I've been doing a little bit of rock climbing with my daughter. Those are kind of very mentally challenging games. I'm always trying to think three moves ahead and, figure out what somebody else is going to do and counter it.
Yeah, I mean, that ties in from everything that I've heard, from the photography. You really have to be thinking of the shot that's next. When it comes to this whole hiring, recruiting thing, you're the one doing the thinking for companies.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But then when you jump on a surfboard or a skateboard or a snowboard, you literally are, I would assume, letting the environment create the opportunity that you're taking advantage of.
I think those are more my release. For example, I moved to Hawaii for 10 years. I was successful in the recruiting industry enough to where I was able to exit, pack up all my stuff and move to Hawaii for 10 years. And my goal was just to surf, and I kind of semi-retired, but I had a company going. For me, it's just to put all your aggression into a wave and just slash the top and do a large, get tubed or just anything like that.
Yeah.
It's just liberating, I guess.
Yeah. I heard you say that, but I saw it in your eyes. Like you just flash back to all these moments.
Totally.
Well, I think that's great.
Totally, for sure. There.
We've got a lot in common. I've got a history of martial arts. I love to surf. I love to skate, all that stuff. I'm not as good at being a recruiter, but hopefully we'll find out a little bit more about that today.
I'll help you out with that.
Okay. So the show sort of runs off of the structure with the 313. And the 313 is something that you can work through, and the deliverable is that you can explain what you do in three sentences, one sentence, and three words. And the challenge that I find when it comes to positioning and messaging and essentially your core brand, who you are as a person and as a business, I find that people are doing the right things in the wrong order, and sometimes we skip over the first couple steps in the process.
That's my life story.
It's very easy.
I'm always looking at end result first,
right? So yeah, you're going for the end result. But today we are going to explore, sort of go back to step one, and I think we'll find some discoveries and maybe some ways of how you have described what you do, and maybe can influence how you describe what you do in the future.
Sure. But I'm excited. Let's get going.
Yeah, but the challenge is I don't care what you do.
I know, right?
And nobody cares what you do. And I really don't feel that anybody cares what anybody does. I feel instead that they're more concerned about the problem that that person solves. So just as a hypothetical, what do you think about that as a concept?
I think you're spot on. The fact is people don't care about what you do. They care about themselves.
Now, do they pretend to care about you? Is there this sort of facade?
Yeah, I mean, how many times you go to a networking event, right? And I did this as an experiment. It was pretty kind of fun where I would tell people, you go to a networking event, you say, well, I'm a headhunter. And they take a step back. Yeah. They're like, okay, they don't know what to say, right? They're just, okay, well, I can't use you right now. Let's look around the room to see if there's anybody else I can use.
Right.
Or who can help me. But when it's funny, when I throw out, and I also host a podcast,
Then there is perk.
Then all of a sudden they're like, oh, really? Well, maybe you can help me. Right. And they start to lean in, and the body language is very interesting.
Right. It is interesting. And I think it's, I feel the way I say it, it comes across a little harsh, but I like it like that. It's a little bit of a kind slap across the face. It's like, I don't care what you do. But I feel like people aren't really willing to admit that to themselves or other people. There's this like facade of really caring, like, oh, I'm so like, tell me more about what you're doing.
No, it's so true. And it's just like on my side of the fence, when I'm dealing with companies and helping them recruit, nobody cares about your company.
Right.
They care about how you can help them.
Right.
Right. If I'm trying to hire somebody, it's not about what you do and how awesome and, you know, wonderful in your office is. It's how can you solve my problems?
Yes. I like it. Okay. So yeah. I'm glad that we're on the same page here.
Yep.
So we're going to play the 3-1-3 game, and we're going to first work on the three sentences. We're going to try to figure out the problem that you solve and squish it into one sentence, your solution in one sentence, and your market in one sentence. And it sounds basic. It sounds like very elementary and kindergarten, but I still am amazed at how many people I meet that just simply can't answer the problem that they solve. So here's a quiz. Here is like a little game show time.
Sure.
And our next contestant, Rick Gerard. Rick.
Where's my buzzer?
No, you don't have a buzzer. I'm the buzzer.
Damn.
And I only buzz when you get wrong, and I'm definitely heavy on the buzzer. Okay. That's a preemptive burnt to let you know that I have a whole bag of burnt with your name on it.
All right.
So can you tell me the problem that you solve without telling me what you do in one sentence?
So I help companies.
Do you see what happened there?
Yeah.
I mean, it's so intuitive. It's so in your brain. Like, you heard me, and I was like, whatever you do, don't tell me what you do. Just tell me the problem. And the first words out of your mouth, I help.
Yep.
So if you're listening out there and you're trying to play along.
God, I failed so quickly.
You failed so quickly. But it's all right. This is like the whammy where you get three whammies.
Sweet.
Okay, so no whammy, no whammy, no whammy. But if you're trying to describe the problem that you solve, everything within your body is going to want to tell people what you do. It's just so ingrained in our brains.
It is.
So the words I help or what I do, anything that references what you're going to do, you're going to get a burn. So let's try it again. This is tough love here. And try to.
Help companies.
But like, just think about this. The word. If we're talking about the problem, there's no need. Like, let take help out of it. So maybe try to phrase the problem is, or the biggest problem that somebody has, or the problem I solve is that blank. Remove help from your vocabulary for this round. You're at two burnts. You have a third ready to go. All right, let's try it.
The biggest problem that entrepreneurs have today is building teams. And we found...
Burnt. Okay. I saw the period.
I wenched right there. I was like, where am I going with this?
Okay. So a little bit of insight for the next round, which is about the solution.
Burnt.
It was funny because I was watching you. You finished your sentence and you stopped. There was an obvious pause, so I knew there's a period. But then, like, you just
How do I repackage
you
this?
You just want to say more.
Well, the other thing is, I've got this one down in my brain where, like, I've got a little two liner that I say, and of course, it starts with "we help" and that.
Yeah.
Right? So this is a great exercise because you just totally blew my mind.
Burr, burr. Yeah, burr, burr, burr.
I'm gonna do that the rest of the day. Burr.
Yeah, burr. I love that. Burr. You gotta drop it to a lower burr.
Burr.
No, see, that's more like a burr. Like, that's a burr. You gotta go deep.
Burr.
There you go.
All right.
So let's really unpack this. You said that the biggest problem entrepreneurs have is their inability to build a team.
Yep.
Okay. Have you ever had a paper cut?
Many.
Okay, what happens with the paper cut?
It hurts a little bit.
Yeah. Then?
It heals.
Okay. Have you ever had your finger cut off? Let me see your fingers. Okay, no, you haven't.
They're
good
all
job.
There, yeah.
But what if you had
part of it cut off?
What if you had an entire finger chopped off? Like right now, I turned this cell phone into a Ginsu knife and said, "Rick, let me see your finger. Chop." Ah! What would happen at that point?
I'd be really sad.
Yeah.
But then I'd probably triage it, and then
I'd probably go get some ice. I don't know where the ice is. I'd call 911. We'd put on some sort of music. I'd take you to the hospital. I'd have to call your wife. We would have to, like...
I'd probably choke you out before that, though.
Yeah, probably. Well, remember, I'm also trained martial arts. So, like, the way to not get choked out anybody is just to slap your own cheek, if you ever need to know.
Or answer the phone.
Yeah. Or answer the phone. Good. So... the idea here is that Oftentimes, people describe the problems that they solve like it's a paper cut. And when you describe something like it's a paper cut, the words that you choose to package into the sentence, people hear it and they're like, meh. But when a finger's chopped off and there's a heightened sense of pain and suffering and extreme situations, there's an inherent feeling that we share as humans that there's something to do. We need to do something. We need to take action.
Got it.
So the difference between a paper cut and a finger being chopped off is the action associated with afterwards. And if you told me the problem, the biggest problem entrepreneurs have is that they can't afford teams, just the way that you said it, I'm going to go, okay, yeah, I know that. That's part of the deal, right?
Yeah.
That's challenging.
Yeah.
So as part of this process, when you only have one sentence to describe the problem that you solve, the challenge, the thought exercise is how can you actually make it feel like a finger's been chopped off? So how can we maneuver within the sentence?
So how do we get to the pain?
How do we get to the pain quickly in one sentence still with this problem that you solve? So think about it. Like if you can't build a team, what's the result? Like what is the pain? Where's the blood?
Well, the company fails.
Okay. Right? So just simple enough, right? The biggest challenge entrepreneurs have is that when they don't form strong teams, they will fail.
Yeah. Right? Spot on. Okay.
So do you see how it's just, we added two words. And you can massage this to make it so that it resonates and it actually gets a little bit more of a finger chop feeling so that people can, they feel like, whoa, this is something I need to deal with.
God, that's so funny because I do that with how we conduct our business. It's all about pain point and solving a pain, right?
Yeah.
So me going through this exercise with you is really interesting because I tend to frame it about me.
Right.
Right?
It's not you,
that's
it's me.
That's just a normal inclination that everybody does. So
yeah, and
you just gave me my own teachable moment.
the cobbler with no shoes, right? You know about that? It's amazing how it's so hard to see. It's easy to give advice, but it's hard to see yourself because you're so like focused on everybody else.
Totally.
So this is your time. Now, here's a fun trick that you can use with only this element of the 313, just the problem statement. And I know that you like to have fun at networking events. You like to mess with people.
Totally.
So the next time you're at a networking event, my challenge to you is when somebody says, hey, Rick, what do you do?
I'm a professional miniature golfer.
That works too.
Works really well.
But see, I don't care about that as long as it solves my problem, right?
I know, right?
I used to tell people I sold toothbrushes back in the day, and they'd be like, huh? All I was trying to do is break their frame.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is.
I love that one.
Yeah. But I think I would be good at selling toothbrushes. Do you know
I think you would be too.
Do you know why you should brush your teeth two times a day?
Why?
One at night for yourself, and one in the morning for everybody else.
So you don't have bed breath.
Yeah. So it's hard to convince people to brush their teeth two times for themselves. That's just like a lot of work and you're by yourself. You're like, this sounds annoying. This is like, I don't want to do this. But brush your teeth at night for yourself and brush your teeth in the morning for everybody else.
I love that.
I like it too.
Yeah.
Would you like to buy a toothbrush?
No, I already have a really fancy electric one.
Okay, good. So
are we doing the sell me this pen?
Yeah, sell me this brush, right? Okay, so the challenge is if somebody asks you, what is it that you do, tell them, it's funny, but it's not really what I do that's important. And as soon as you do that, you will break the frame because most people are just telling people what they do. And you say, it's not what I do, it's the problem that I solve. That's what I'm passionate about. That's why I get up in the morning and that's what I solve a very particular problem. And then stop talking. And I guarantee you.
And they say, what's the problem?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you asked. It is the fact that when entrepreneurs don't build strong teams, their companies fail. I solve that problem. And then you don't say anything else. And then they're going to go, well,
how do you do that?
Yeah. What do you do?
Yeah.
And then you say, you move on to the next. And what it does is it actually gets them to actually be interested in what you do. Then I've got this thing called permission-based pitching. This is how you sell the toothbrush, right? You say, here, we go through it. It's not what I do, it's a problem that I solve. Great, what's the problem? The problem is this. Oh, well, what do you do to solve it? But before I get there, do you think that that's a problem in the real world? It's easier for people to admit that other people have that problem.
Sure.
So they go, yeah, that's definitely a problem. I know entrepreneurs, that's a problem for them. Okay, is it a problem that you have? And then you're like, well, yeah, And then you say, is that a problem that you're looking to solve anytime soon? And if they say, yeah, you go, I can help you out.
I'm your man.
I haven't even told you what I do.
Yeah.
But I can get you interested in what I do if I can convince you that I solve a problem that you have. If you're in the market to solve that problem, I'm your guy. So it's actually a very fun process to work through, and it cuts to the chase. And if somebody doesn't have the problem, you can say, well, do you know anybody that has a problem? Because I can help them, but I'm not going to pitch you because I know you don't care what I do.
That's a great opening angle.
Yeah, it works really well.
It gets people to lean in.
Yeah, you know where you can practice it?
I'm going to practice it all day today.
You can practice it in Ubers.
In Ubers?
Yeah, it's amazing because they're right. Like, oh, what do you do? You know, maybe Lyft because they're more talkative. Sometimes Ubers are just like driving, right?
Sure.
But it's like, it's not what I, you literally say, it's not what I do. It's the problem that I solve. And they love to
talk. That's my new line the rest of the day.
It is. Yeah. Well, hopefully the rest of your life.
And I'll probably make, well, okay. I'm starting small.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And I'm going to expand out.
Good. Baby
steps.
No,
but the rest of the day, because I know I've got phone calls all this afternoon. So that's going to be my.
All right. So one trick and a mistake that I've seen is that if it's used without making it seem like it's something that you're kind of coming up with at the moment, it doesn't work as well. So, hey, what do you do? It's not what I do. It's a problem that I solve. Whoa. Right?
Got it.
So there's a little bit of coyness to it. Well, you know, this may sound funny, but really, it's not what I do that's important. It's a problem that I solve. So you can play with it, and it can become your own. So the idea here is with the 313, the first challenge, which is a challenge, is to say the problem that you solve without telling me what you do in one sentence and make it bloody. It's
Got
a fun
it.
Exercise. It's like, okay, now if I've gotten to the point where I want to know what you do, I'm going to ask you, okay, so what do you do? So here's your chance for glory. We're going to give you three more burns credit, okay? So
you're
back to a clean slate, okay? Can you tell me what you do in just one sentence?
So this one I can...
You can say
I help...
Yeah, yeah, okay. This is your free, so free game here.
This would go back to what I'm supposed to be saying. I help companies attract talent and hire the right people by solving a person's career wound or healing a person's career wound.
Okay. So now my question is, I'm not going to judge your sentence at all. It was a sentence, so good job. Did you hear there was no burnt? You
know,
feel good?
I'm stoked I didn't get
You're kind of surprised. You're like, when is the burnt coming? Okay.
That's what it does. You just took me back to Catholic school and the nuns.
I should have a ruler around here
somewhere.
I know,
right?
Does that solution solve the problem that you said you solve?
Yeah.
Okay. It's surprising how many people have a solution that doesn't match up with the problem. And it's a total balance and checks for yourself. So if the problem is that entrepreneurs who don't form good teams are going to fail, your solution is helping those entrepreneurs find the right people to create the right teams?
Yeah, to effectively to succeed.
But succeed in a team format.
Sure.
Well, see, that's where like there's a little disconnect, right? If it's entrepreneurs who don't have the ability or knowledge or strength or ability or people to form the right teams, they'll fail. So your solution is to help recruit people, and there might be an opportunity to somewhat tie in a very direct correlation, the right people to form the right teams so that they can. And I'm just curious because teamwork sounds like or building teams is the problem. So the
absolutely. Yeah.
So the recruitment, you're helping people to form the right teams or the right people for the right teams?
Find the key talent that they need to succeed, right?
But how do you tie that to the teamwork? Because if you say, I'm going to find you the right talent to succeed, but the problem is that entrepreneurs can't form the right teams, is success dependent on those individuals you bring into the company to then create that team?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So just adding a bit more that ties it back to that problem, if it's team, success from a standpoint of having the right teams and the right people to do the right thing, right?
Correct.
Because I really believe that when people are hearing your ideas for the first time, you have to lay it out in almost as simplistic terms as possible and all the dots need to connect.
Yeah, and I tend to just... verbal diarrhea, right?
Like yeah, well, you know why?
I think all of us.
You know why people have verbal diarrhea? This is a rhetorical question. I'm going to ask you anyways. You're like, I don't want to get into this. This could go bad.
Can we say this?
The difference between the word what and how. What is the difference between the word what and how?
Oh, how gets into the inner workings of how you do something, and what means it's just an over a broad. What do you do?
Yeah.
You
know, so the challenge, the problem that I see is that when somebody asks an entrepreneur what they do, the entrepreneur answers how they do what they do. That's a different answer.
Sure.
So if I ask you what you do, and you just tell me what you do and then stop, what do you think the next question is I'm going to ask?
How do you do it?
Exactly. How does that work? And yeah. So you're taking the steam out of the person who you're talking with. And if you just say, blah, 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 you literally are just, you are verbal diarrhea on the person in front of you, and you haven't even given them an opt-in. Like, it's like sending them emails without them actually clicking to the opt-in, right?
Oh, is that bad?
Yes.
Kidding.
So again, thinking conceptual, because a 313 helps to put your messaging in a box, but the idea is a lot of the psychology that goes on behind it, what would make sense. If somebody asks you what you do, just tell them in a very high level what you do, such that the next question, if they are interested, they're going to ask you how. And then before you tell them how, ask them what they know about it. And this is something that people miss.
Okay.
So again, it's not what I do, it's a problem that I solve. Okay, great. What problem do you solve? The problem is this. Okay, interesting. Well, what do you actually do then? This is what I do. How does that work? Well, before I tell you how it works, what do you know about recruiting? Have you ever been recruited? Have you ever gone after a headhunter? Do you know what that works? How that works? And they're going to go, my chance to talk? Really? I get to talk to them? Oh my gosh, yeah. Oh, so I have a friend who does it, and here, this and this and this and this and this and this and this, and you listen. And you bite your tongue so that you don't say anything, and you listen. And then when they finish, you go, you are so smart. Like, you know this, obviously. Now, here's how I do it a little differently. All that stuff that you said, good job. But here's how we're a little bit different.
Got it.
And so what you're doing...
You're actually bringing in your differentiator, or what makes you better than everybody else.
Yeah, so instead of explaining how you do everything, you get them to say what they know. Now, granted, if they don't know anything about headhunting... Then all of a sudden you're like, great, let's start from square one. So this is what it is. There are scientific studies that show a positive correlation between the amount of time that somebody talks in a conversation and how positive they feel towards the person they're talking with.
Oh, absolutely. I'm a big believer that the more you listen, the more people trust you. The more you talk, the less they trust you.
Yeah. So it's about getting people to talk.
Yeah.
So the 313 helps you say less to get other people to say more.
See, my angle is... a bit different, where I kind of talk, but then I'll ask leading questions and I start to get them talking.
Right.
That's how I usually do my networking or how I conduct my business. It's not about me, because I find that most people are most interested in themselves. It's just human nature.
Yeah.
Right. And they want to talk about themselves. So I let them and I just listen. And then I do the probing. So I guess I do this from a backwards perspective.
Well, it's not necessarily backwards, but it's just the concept is there.
Yeah.
And there's no right or wrong way to do it. I just want to drill into people's heads that when somebody asks you what you do, just tell them at a very high level what you do. And if they're interested at all, they're going to ask you how it works. And then before you just go off blabbering about how it works, because you're excited that somebody asked you, so you can share everything
totally.
You've been working on. Just bite your tongue and say, well, before I tell you everything, like, what is it that you know about this? It gives them a chance to talk, and it gets you a chance to learn what they know, so that you can just hit and highlight what is different while still giving them credit and accolades and making them feel good about, you know, having some sort of a foundation.
That's a great perspective.
Now, I am honestly interested in how you do what you do. So how does it work?
How does it work on my end?
Yeah, like you're the solution that you have is that you are a recruiter that helps companies find the right people, and at the same time solving the employee wounds of the person who is that you're helping to get hired, right?
Yeah.
But how does it work?
So we approach the way in which we search for people, or the way we recruit, from the perspective of the candidate or the person who we're trying to attract. And the fact is that there has to be some sort of pain point there that needs to be solved in order for them to make a decision to move on.
Now, real quick, do you typically work with people who already have a job and you're saying, come over here, my friend?
Yeah.
You do.
Typically.
But what about people who are unemployed.
You have low unemployment. So we're at like 3.1% unemployment here in Orange County, in California as a whole.
Okay.
So do I help people that are unemployed? Sometimes, not too often.
Okay.
We work in executive search, so it tends to be we're pulling somebody out of a company and placing them into another.
How does that conversation start? Do you shoot them an email? Do you hit them up on LinkedIn? Like, I'm curious.
Yeah, it's usually a series of text messages and emails.
Texting. So you just come right out the gate with a text?
I do all three.
Okay.
I'll hit them on LinkedIn. I'll send them an email and I'll text them.
Okay.
Yeah.
In that order?
Yeah.
Now, do you wait for a reply for each one to go to the next level?
No. I'll hit them up the next day and the next day. You know, usually we're targeted, right? So I'll identify a group of people that we want to go after based on kind of whatever criteria that we need to fulfill. And so I'll identify a short list and then I'll essentially reach out to those people and I'll keep going until I get them. So I had one guy that I placed 2 months ago. It took me 31 days in a row to get the person to talk to me.
Wow.
Yeah. Most people give up after two or three tries.
Okay. So we have some advice out there for people who are seeking to get in touch with people. And then I also want to get some advice on how to avoid people like you at the same time. not in a bad way.
But trying to avoid, like, you know, getting a call and having somebody say, don't call me anymore. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
People look at it like, oh, I don't want people to yell at me.
Right.
That's an opportunity.
Tell me a little bit more about that. So let's go from one side of the fence and then the other. We'll play both sides. But when you are trying to get in front of somebody, mm-hmm. because whether it's from a recruitment or whether you're trying to recruit somebody, you're trying to get them to look at your pitch deck or you're trying to do, there's a lot of outreach that goes on. Yeah. So what are your top three tips for outreach when it comes to getting people to actually pay attention, look at you, answer the call, answer the email, something? Because there's so much noise. How do you do it? What are some of the top three?
God, you know, my dad always told me that the squeaky wheel gets the oil, right?
Okay.
So if you're the one who's just not necessarily annoying, but persistent. I like to be pleasantly persistent. So I'll reach out to somebody. I use a lot of humor. So when I reach out to people, my objective is to get somebody to brighten somebody's day, to make them laugh. I won't send them what a traditional person who holds my position would send them. And I make it about them. So my goal is to uplift and get them thinking about their career, what's happening. And I'm trying to get them to identify the fact that there's something there that needs to be healed. So that's all I'm trying to do. The top three ways for me to get a hold of people, calling people.
Calling people. Does that still work?
It works. And it works tremendously well. But people are afraid to call people. But you get somebody on the phone, that's an opportunity. It's much more effective. I think that email and text should lead to a phone call, and a phone call should lead to a meeting.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, why do you think people are scared of calling?
Because people yell at them. How'd you get my number? Why is that? You know, they look at it as a scary thing.
So how did you get my number? What do you say to that? I got it off of LinkedIn.
I'm really good at what I do. Let's not talk about me, though. Let's talk about you.
Oh, I like that.
So
So tip number one is actually pick up the phone and call.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
You're a human. Talk to another human.
Now, do you think that, what about the...
I get more people mad at me, by the way, from my text messages than I do from my phone call.
Really?
Because they misconstrued what I say.
And you have a chance to be like, hey, I'm not a spammy. I'm just a nice guy who's pleasantly persistent.
So my text messages have turned into, hey, I just left you a voicemail. Let's talk.
Oh.
You know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I had somebody reach out to me via text message who wanted to be a client, and I'd never had that before. Usually it's an email or it's through the website or something. And I was like, whoa, like it actually kind of shocked me, right? But you're saying calling gets, you have less pushback on calling, or is it just they're less angry or?
You know, you always have a certain amount of skepticism if somebody picks up the phone.
Yeah.
Like, who are you? Why are you calling me?
Yeah.
If you're good at it, if you give good phone, it's really easy to get past that.
Gotcha.
You know, and I think that's a highly unused tool.
It's a lost skill these days.
Yeah, people don't talk to
people. Okay, so call number one. Text to let them know that you call that you left them a message.
Yep.
Right? You're not just coming out with an aggressive text.
Yep.
Okay. Then what's the third area?
Of messaging?
No, just the third tip. So hit them with a phone call. Text them to let them know.
Being pleasantly persistent.
Being pleasantly persistent.
You know, you do this thing where you do your little stick figure thing.
Yeah.
And you put that out every day.
Yes,
right?
Sir.
That is brilliant.
Thank you.
I love it. And as I started, like, one day I actually, when I met you, I'm like, oh, I guess it should.
Okay, try to draw a stick figure.
I don't want to do stick figures. That's not me. But what was interesting about it is that you've built this big following because of it, and people know you for that.
Yeah.
And so I guess the third thing would be building a personal brand and providing content that draw people to you.
So that once they get off the phone or once they listen to the message, do you assume that they're going to go online?
You're Googled right away.
Yeah.
Right? And so if people see that you have a presence, that you're somebody that is worth talking to,
yeah,
then they're going to contact you.
But then they probably see that you've got your podcast, which is Higher Power.
Yep.
And then they're like, wait a minute, this guy is recruiting me. And then all of a sudden they probably bring their shoulders in and they have this like, oh, right. Yes. Somebody likes me outside of my work.
Yeah. You know,
maybe
it does play with the ego a little bit, I would imagine. Yeah. You know what? I try to get, rickgerard.com. Like if you Google me, I've got...
I'm going to Google you right now. Okay.
It's funny because there's one NHL hockey player. His name was Rick Gerard. So he's got one listing in the top 10. The rest of the stuff is mine.
All right. Top list. So about 9,500,000 results in 0.37 seconds. And we've got Rick Gerard, recruiter, public speaker, trainer, host, Higher Power. And that's on sidesearch.com about us.
Cool. I don't even know what that is.
All right. Then we've got your Twitter. And this is one of the reasons why I love Twitter. It is so...
I'm so bad at Twitter.
Oh.
God.
But no, it's so easy to rank. Like if somebody Googles me, chances are they're going to see my last three tweets. And so that's a... People don't understand that and that value of Twitter. Okay. Then let's see. Then we've got your LinkedIn. But real quick, back to this. If you look at LinkedIn, it doesn't show us anything. But Twitter, at a glance, it pulls up the last three tweets. Like, they see the full tweets, which is kind of crazy, right?
Yeah, I should probably be tweeting more. But I got fat thumbs. It's really hard for me to type on
there's,
my phone.
There's solutions to that problem. There's solutions to that problem. Okay, and then Rick Gerard, problem solver, founder, and CEO, Stride Search. And then Elite Prospects, and then Wikipedia.
Elite Prospects is the NHL guy, I think.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah.
And then some videos. You and Rick Franz? No. Yes.
Yeah, me and Rick Franz here up there.
Cool.
Yeah.
Some pictures. Yeah, I see the hockey player in you. Did you ever play hockey?
I did for a little while.
All right. So you can
when I moved up to Idaho, I'm like, I'm going to pick up hockey.
You know, I was a goaltender, ice hockey goaltender for 15 years.
I was a tripod.
Just,
I got much better. I started, I think, when I moved up to Idaho, I was like 23.
Okay.
So I played until I moved to Hawaii. And then, you know.
Yeah, there's no ice in Hawaii.
No, there's ice in Hawaii.
Oh, is there?
You
that's right.
You need to wear a kidney belt because it's like it's the most ragged ice that you've ever. And pickup hockey was from 11:30 to 3 in the morning on a like Wednesday or something
okay.
like that.
Yeah. So not worth it.
No, not at all. I had to be at work at 4:30.
I dig it. Okay, so this idea, let's go back to this the basics here. The problem that you solve is that essentially, if you don't have the right people on board, your company is going to fail miserably. A yep. bloody death, and everybody's going to get their fingers chopped off. Your solution...
I love that imagery.
You know, when I'm actually on stage, I have a fake finger, and I do a chop, and I have a fake finger, and I like freak out, and then I usually throw my finger into the audience or drop it and kick it in.
Yeah,
it's a good one.
I know.
And everybody's like, did he just really do that? Yes. And actually, I do that in my my third TEDx talk. I pull the finger out because there's a finger chop there, too.
I saw the bear one. I love that bear one.
Yeah.
Where you run around stage.
Yeah. How to not get chased by a bear.
What is funny is like the people in the front row, if you look at them, they're like, there's one person in the front row that's just got the look on the, is he really running around in a circle right now?
You should have seen the rehearsal when they're like, no, sir, you're not allowed to get off the stage. I'm like, really? Watch me. I'm going to get off the stage. They're like, no, we don't have lights set up there. I'm like, well, you either put lights or I'm in the dark because I'm running from the bear.
Beautiful.
All right, so the problem that you solve, we're clear on. Your solution is clear. We understand how you do it, and how you do it is basically creating a target list of people that you go after, and this is for companies who you're trying to place within, right?
Correct.
Okay, so the one sentence of the problem, the one sentence of the solution, and the final piece of the puzzle is your market. So I want you to describe your target market without using the A word or the E word.
And the A word and the E word are?
Anyone or everyone.
Yeah.
Okay, good, good. I have a feeling you're going to be good with this. Yeah. All right. So what is your target market?
I am specific to tech startups, primarily before a B round, or like B or A to B round.
Okay. Any certain location?
Primarily Orange County and San Francisco Bay Area.
Okay.
Most of my career has been recruiting in the San Francisco Bay Area and the Silicon Valley.
Okay. And the reason I ask, and we could keep asking and asking and asking, is I really feel that the more targeted you are, the easier it is to target them, and sure. the less time wasted on everyone else. I find, you know, you work with a lot of entrepreneurs, right?
Yep.
Do you find that they use these words? My app is for everyone. This solution is for anybody who?
Yep.
What do you think about that?
Drives me nuts.
Drives me nuts,
you
too.
You got to target first and then expand.
Yeah.
I once, when I was in Hawaii, I started a startup with my wife's boss, who was a neurosurgeon. And he kept, I'm like, just trying to keep the guy focused on, here's our target. This is all we're going to hit.
Yeah.
And we go to presentations and we were trying to raise capital. And somebody would throw him a question. And instead of saying, no, this is our target and this is what we're going to hit, he started going out, well, yeah, we could do that later. And he started kind of meandering all over the place, which killed our credibility, which really made it so we couldn't get funding.
I like that. It kills your credibility if your target market sees that you're going after people that are outside of that target.
Yeah. When people throw in ideas, have you thought about doing this? Yes, we have. And it won't work because our target is here.
Yeah.
You know, if you keep focused in here, once you hit that target and you own that target, then expand out.
Yeah.
But there's no reason to like, I'm going to hit everybody.
They literally feel and they tell people this is for everyone or anybody who, and that gets you into problems when you're trying to pitch your idea to people, because most of the time the person you're pitching isn't part of your target market.
They feel like they're going to lose business
if they
don't target.
Well, a fun exercise that I use with people, and you're welcome to use it. Anybody who's listening is welcome to use it. I came up with it, and it's so fun to do, especially if you know they're going to walk right into it. And they use the word anyone or everyone. You go, okay, cool. Just a couple questions. How many, and we'll play this with you. You're probably not going to walk into it, but it's okay.
Yeah.
How many clients could you, like, what is max capacity for you?
Clients?
Yeah.
Four to five at a time.
Four to five at a time. Yep. Okay. So, and is that per month maybe?
It's dependent upon the search.
Okay. So let's just say, take a guess, per year. How many is like, you're just busting at the seams, being crazy busy with how many people, say, over the year?
So, let's see. I think 23 searches I completed last year.
Okay. So let's say 35 or 40, just to be aggressive.
Okay.
All right. Now, the second question is, if I had 10 people lined up outside this door and we shut down the studio for a bit and I gave you as much time as you needed with each of these people, and each of these people are the exact target market that you talked about. They're in tech, they're in San Francisco, they're here, they hit all the buttons that you want from a target, and they're lined up and you get as much time as you want to close them. Out of 10 people, what would your closing ratio be?
Probably three.
Okay, three. So
that I would choose to want to work with.
Okay. I like that spin.
Yes.
I like that. So then we do a little bit of math and I go, okay, so if you have 40 clients, that is max capacity for you for the year. And I'm going to get a calculator so I don't embarrass myself. Okay. I know you're reaching for something as well. So if you have 40 clients, but your closing ratio is 3 out of 10, then what is the total number of people that you actually have to get in front of? So it would be, let's see, 40. It's going to be 40 divided by 3 equals that, I think, then times 10. Essentially, if you got in front of 133 people this year with a closing ratio of 3 out of 10, you would get your 40 deals.
Sure.
And that math is kind of crazy because there's 130 people within Orange County. There's probably 3 million people in Orange County. And so this thought process, when people are like, oh yeah, we have this many clients and I can close all these people, it's like, okay, well then that's easy. You just have to get in front of just a few people if you're closing that many.
That's what's funny is there, you can't close all those people. And you shouldn't close.
And that's why if you just focus on the people that you can close and then do the math of the people that you can close within that, it really helps to narrow and focus the value of just getting in front of the top 100, 150 people that are super focused. Everybody else, who cares about you?
I feel you.
Yeah, good. Yeah. I like it. So you've got your three sentences. You've got your problem sentence, your solution sentence, and your market sentence, right? Okay. Being very specific. So those three sentences alone, by themselves, standalone, can essentially describe what you do. And that's pretty powerful.
Wait, so the market sentence is boiled down to three words?
No, so it's three sentences total. The problem is one sentence.
Got it.
The solution is one sentence. Your target market is the next sentence.
Got it.
Okay, so those are all three together. So if that's all you had was three sentences, you would essentially be able to hit the high level elements and then get everybody else to talk.
Got it.
Right? The problem I solve, my solution, you can dig into the how later, and your target market so that you can help identify people.
Got it.
Right? It's like business 101, but it's packaged in a certain way. Now, if you have these...
So my target market would be disruptive entrepreneurs.
Who are in Orange County or San Francisco that are looking for a job to join teams that, like, it all stitches in together.
Who are looking to build a high-performance team, something like that.
Right, exactly. Okay, and so that clicks in with the team that's a problem, and then you solve that problem with the team, and it all kind of connects the dots.
Got it.
It's like a checks and balances. Then how do you get that into one sentence? It's just mathematics. Because three things, the problem, the solution, and market, those are three things. Like if I had my laptop, this computer keyboard, and this mouse.
I went to art school. I'm not good at math.
Okay.
Let's see.
So you can combine three elements six different ways. It's actually three factorial. So 3 × 2 × 1. So I could put my computer here, this year, and I could change it like this 6 different times. Whoa, that was dramatic. I hit something on the keyboard and it was like, bam. Wow.
I thought it was dance time.
It was dance time for a second.
Sweet, though I started.
Wow, that was like my burnt. I was like hitting the keyboard. So essentially, these three elements...
Can't believe I missed that opportunity to burn you.
You can do it now.
Burn.
Okay, thank you. These three elements can be combined 6 different ways. So you can package these three sentences into one sentence by saying, I solve this problem for these people, and here's how I do it. Or for these people who have this problem, here's what I do. You can rearrange them 6 different ways.
Sure.
So you can squish it down only if you really pinpoint those three items.
Got it.
Then to get it into three words, it's not really three words, it's two things. It's using metaphor and analogy. So imagine if I'm thinking about you and what you're doing, you would be the blank of blank, or where the blank meets blank. And it's not necessarily about recruiting. It would be you're like a black belt for team building. Or you are...
I'm the Sherpa of hiring.
You're the Sherpa of hiring. There you go, right?
Woo!
Woo! So what that does is it's not 100% accurate, but it's kind of fun, and it lets people take a little bit of insight to make their own connections. And so imagine for a moment, let's go back to the beginning. Hey, Rick, nice to meet you at this event. Yeah, Rick, okay, good. So what is it you do? It's not what I do. It's a problem that I solve. Oh, what's the problem that you solve? Think of me as the Sherpa of hiring. Just let that one sit for a moment. Now the conversation is in your hands because you've got them thinking and it all patches together. And if you have a very short amount of time to explain what you do, just use a metaphor, use an analogy. Gets people thinking inside their head, which means you've put your idea inside of theirs. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the 313.
Bam.
In a fun, exploratory way that gives you these deliverables that now you can utilize, and it helps to remind you about some of the psychology behind saying less, which oftentimes is more.
Whew. So much more.
Now, we know that we can Google you to find your name and get all this stuff, but if you wanted people to find more about you, or if you... if there's an executive that's in your target market that wants to find you to have them place you, like, where do they go to find you?
Yeah, so I can be reached via, you can call me. I love to be called. I'm accessible. You can reach me at 949-777-5656. I take phone calls. You can also schedule a time with me via calendar. Just send me an email. I'm Rick at stride search.com. I also am, you can find me at rickgerard.com, stridesearch.com, or higherpowerradio.com. And that's higher, H-I-R-E. It's not a religious show.
Nice. Yeah. I just like the phone number. I think that's great. Give your phone number one more time, but say it like you're an announcer.
Absolutely. You can reach me at 949-777-5656. And if you call now, you get a handy-dandy set of steak knives.
And a toothbrush if you act now. All right, Rick. Well, hey, this is a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Great.
Yeah. Keep solving problems. Keep solving problems, buddy, because remember, nobody cares what you do, but you are the Sherpa of hiring. And if anybody's going to place somebody, it's going to be you.
Absolutely.
All right, everybody. This was fun. I had fun. Hopefully you did too. Check out other shows at ryanfolan.com/talk. We will be back next week, as we always are. And keep solving problems.